Welcome to The Jewelry District, a podcast by JCK, brought to you by the De Beers Institute of Diamonds. Today, Rob Bates and Victoria Gamelski talk about Ukrainian jewelry designer Valeria Guzema, G7 updates, and John Kennedy's legacy at the Jewelers Security Alliance.
Hey everyone, welcome to The Jewelry District. This is Victoria Gamelski, Editor-in-Chief of JCK and jckonline.com, calling in from Los Angeles, and I'm with
Rob Bates, News Director of JCK and jckonline.com, calling in from New York City. How you doing?
I'm good. It was really nice to see you in New York, where I was attending the big festivities around Jewelry Social Week. I don't know if there's an actual name for the
24 carat. I call it 24 carat weekend, but
oh yes, of course. There's so much more to it now that it feels like isolating. Yes, of course. I know I can hear it in your voice, and obviously we talked a little bit that you're a tiny bit under the weather after all the festivities, which the downside of lots of social hours. But I hope you're on the mend.
A little bit, yes, mostly.
Mostly. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. I always like our chats. I think we end up seeing each other at 24 karat, which is always nice. And yeah, so it was lovely. It feels like I've been home now for, you know, a week and a half and kind of back into the swing of things. It was a big, very packed weekend with, of course, Gem Awards 24 karat. And this year, for the first time, a Plum Club symposium, which was a 2-day affair. I could only make the first day because I had to fly back to LA on the Monday. But again, lots of interesting speakers and takeaways, and look to JCK for some of that coverage. And one of the big reasons I was there that weekend was also to lead a conversation at the very tail end of the Jewelers Vigilance Committee luncheon.
And I would have to say, of all the things that I went to that weekend, I think that was probably the most impactful thing that I heard. And I thought it was extremely moving, this talk you had with the Ukrainian designer at the Jewelers Vigilance Committee luncheon. And I heard that you work with the JVC to set up this talk.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for those kind words. Yeah, I think a lot of people were moved. Of course, I was on stage kind of in the thick of it, so it was hard to get a read, but I did get a lot of nice comments. I'll back up and explain. So I'm a huge fan of Tiffany Stevens, one of the industry's smartest, most on point, really. And at the same time, I mean, she's so good at what she does. She's kind of like the industry's lawyer, you know, as it were. And she's just so relaxed and chill and fun at the same time. I was really honored when she reached out to me maybe like 6 weeks before the luncheon and asked if I knew anyone who might be open to speaking at the luncheon specifically about Russian sanctions. And she was hoping I would lead a conversation with somebody who might bring a personal story or a human face to the sanctions and to what's happening in Ukraine, and help kind of hammer home why it's important for our industry to think about sanctions in the first place, to be committed to them, to embrace them, and who on the ground there in Ukraine is really, you know, seeing the impact of that. And my first thought was a woman I'd not met, but I was familiar with her brand. Now, her name is Valeria Guzema. She's the founder of Guzema, which is a fashion fine jewelry brand based in Kyiv. She founded the company, I believe, in 2016 in Kyiv, and she was a fashion editor, a fashion reporter for a local TV channel, and a really beautiful, put together, very sophisticated woman. She recently got a PR company, luxury brand group, to represent her here in the U.S. because, very exciting, Guzema will be exhibiting at the JCK show this year. And so I already knew through Duval Osteen, who's worked with luxury brand group for years under Frank Proctor, that Guzema would be coming to JCK, that Valeria would be there as well. And I had a hunch that she might be open to coming to New York. I learned through Duval that she was actually had moved with her kids to Barcelona. So she left Kyiv because obviously there's still quite a threat there. And so as it turns out, she had returned to Ukraine, was coming to New York from Kyiv. And it, as she said on stage, it took her like 2.5 days to get to New York because it's just not that simple anymore. You can't just fly into Kyiv like it's a regular day or a regular year. you have to take sort of numerous forms of transport just to get out of Ukraine and then through Europe and then on to New York. So I was so touched that she made that effort, because she's got young kids, she's got a husband, she's got family, and she's got a business. And she, there on stage with me at the very end of the JVC luncheon, just shared her story. And it was just such a pure, authentic take on what it's like to live a very normal life, planning your vacations, running your business, taking your kids to school, and then suddenly bombs start falling on your home. And it was extremely emotional. I think a lot of people were very moved because it was so from the heart. There was absolutely nothing contrived about what she said. It was just such a pure retelling of her experience of war. And she really made it clear that she was like everybody else. She was a young professional building a business that was seeing a lot of success in Kyiv. She had boutiques opening. She had been named 30 under 30 kind of entrepreneur. She was really getting a lot of attention and growing this really lovely jewelry brand. And I do encourage anybody who's going to be in Vegas to come to JCK and see her in the Design Collective and to hear a little bit of her story firsthand, because as you said, it was impactful. And so I was honored to do that. I was thrilled that Tiffany asked me, and Matt Stellar was presented with the Stanley Schechter Lifetime Achievement Award, which he's always such a great speaker. And it was just such a thrill to be in that room and to be on stage with some of these luminaries and to give Valeria a little moment in the spotlight and allow her to share her story. So,
yeah, and I think what was good about it, and we can talk about sanctions in a second, I think that when we talk about sanctions, people talk about how it affects them and the specific procedures that they're going to have to obey and all the paperwork. And especially, you know, we just passed 2 years of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and there's obviously been wars since then and atrocities since then, and it can slip your mind. And I think one of the things that she did was she brought it home and she talked about, you know, that these things are not abstractions and they affect people, and it's not clear what's going to happen with the sanctions and how they're going to work. But I think she definitely made an extremely compelling moral case. There's something that we should be thinking about, and we should be very leery about buying Russian diamonds.
I agree. I'm just so happy that was the case. That she was so lovely, you know. It's like she was just a lovely spokesperson for her country and her way of life, you know, and how shattered it is now, you know, 2 years on, how much different life is. So anyways, I'm just happy that despite all that, she's still able to carry on and is in fact growing. I mean, expanding into the US market, and beyond just having a very compelling story, there's also, of course, the fact that she really does make really cool jewelry that is fashionable and fun and, you know, gold. There's everything from kind of classic designs like tennis bracelets or transformable jewelry, and, you know, really reasonably priced. And so I feel like, okay, so even beyond just the fact that she has a great story, there's still a business reason to come see her at JCK. So, and of course all the other design at the Design Collective. So that's a plug for JCK, which is of course coming up in the week after Memorial Day, late May, early June.
This podcast is brought to you by Nivoda. With access to over 1.6 million diamonds and gemstones and a team of experts to handle everything from QC to invoicing and shipping, Nivoda's marketplace enables you to increase margins, focus on your customers, and grow your business. Nivoda even helps you sell more with its powerful retail tools, allowing you to showcase its global diamond and gemstone inventory to your customers online and in store, so you'll always have what they're looking for. Book a demo now at nivoda.com/JD podcast. That's nivoda.com/JD podcast.
You know, given that we're still sort of 2 years on, very much in the thick of what is wrought on our industry, tell us, Rob, about the G7, since there's always something new to say about sanctions and what on earth is happening with the diamond trade.
It's been a crazy couple weeks. March 1st was the deadline for the implementation of the first kind of tranche of sanctions. As we know, rough purchased directly from Russia has been banned a long time in the United States, but there's always been this loophole, which is this idea that if you get the rough polished in India and it comes to the United States, it's not considered Russian diamonds, even though the diamonds were mined in Russia. So for the last year or so, the G7 has been trying to figure out how to handle this. And they finally put on the first part of the sanctions on March 1st. And it was very confusing and stressful for people because the United States did not issue any kind of guidance about how these sanctions would be implemented. So basically, you're not allowed to bring in polished diamonds over half carat from Russia, right? So the question is, how do you prove that? And there were all sorts of ideas about people submitting evidence of invoices and documentary evidence. But basically, the thing went so much up to the deadline that in the end, Customs basically just said, we're going to rely on self-declarations. Now, these self-declarations, they're not nothing. They have a certain legal force. And certainly if you try to blatantly mislead Customs, you can be in trouble. But I would say, and I think this is the widespread perception, that quote unquote self-declarations is probably the weakest form of evidence that Customs could ask for. So they basically went for the kind of easiest route. And in a way, it makes sense because, you know, Customs agents have a lot to deal with, people bringing in drugs and weapons and immigration and all sorts of stuff. So they don't necessarily have time to be checking every diamond invoice to make sure it's kosher. So in retrospect, it's probably not surprising that they went the easiest route, but it's a setback for the G7's efforts because the idea behind the G7 working together on sanctions, and this is basically why the G7 exists, is for countries to kind of work together to set policy. Except in this case, they all agreed that they wanted a certain ban on Russian diamonds, but they disagreed on how it would be enforced. So the way the European Commission is enforcing it is very different than the way the United States is enforcing it and the way United Kingdom and Canada. So everybody has different rules. So it's kind of made it a lot more confusing. And perhaps the biggest battle is going to be over September, where the European Union is pushing a plan for every diamond to be certified in Antwerp. And a lot of people in the industry are very unhappy about this plan because they feel it adds an extra step, extra expense. And the whole idea is you want to make it easier for people to export non-Russian diamonds. And this will actually make it more expensive and perhaps harder to export non-Russian diamonds. So there's a lot of controversy over this plan. The heads of three African nations, Namibia, Botswana, and Angola, have been sending letters to the heads of the G7 saying, this is why we have issues with this particular plan. So it's unfortunately become a bit of a mess. And I'm not honestly 100% sure how I feel about it, because I certainly, you hear the woman you spoke to speak and you realize this is really something that's very important. You know, this industry should not be dealing with Russian diamonds, right? The moral logic is clear, at least in my mind. You know, how do you put this into practice? I think this is something that's been a real problem, and we'll see how it's going to end up. I think part of me hopes that they go back to the drawing board and come up with a workable plan that will penalize Russian diamonds, but also not make it harder for people to export other kinds of diamonds.
Does anyone have a sense of how many Russian diamonds might actually be in the country or have been imported?
It's very hard to tell. And I mean, one of the kind of more interesting issues here is that a lot of Russian diamonds are very small. So right now we're banning a carat and up, and it's going to eventually go down to a half carat. A lot of Russian diamonds, a substantial part of their production is under a half carat. And, you know, these are diamonds. They aren't worth a lot on an individual level. So it doesn't necessarily make sense to go through a whole parcel of diamonds and find out which ones are Russian, because you're not talking about a high value item. It's only in the aggregate when you put them together that you have something that's obviously a valuable export. And I should mention that Russian diamond exports are about $5 billion a year. When you talk about profits, you talk about maybe a billion or so. And, you know, not all of that goes to the government. So we're talking about probably less than 1% of overall Russian exports. But retailers, to answer your question, certainly the big retailers and certainly the name brands, the Signets, the Tiffany's, the LVMH's, the Cartier's, all these companies, I think they realize that they have to be extra, extra careful. And they're the ones kind of taking the extra precautions. And certainly any jeweler who wants to, there's tools out there for them to take precautions. So my sense is that I don't think it's zero. I don't think there's zero Russian diamonds coming into the United States, but it's clearly substantially less than it was. And, you know, we've seen this before with, you know, the Dodd-Frank 1502 Conflict Gold Act, something that was passed with very extremely well-intentioned. It made public companies disclose whether they use conflict gold, particularly from the Congo. And it was passed with the best of intentions. And it had very bad consequences for a long time. Now, possibly things have straightened out a little bit more from what I understand, but it really hurt the economy of the Congo for a very, very long time. So you have to be careful.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thanks for sort of always being on top of this, because this, it is so complicated and truly seems ever changing. It's hard to believe it's been 2+ years. It's just wild. And it just feels like such a stalemate. Again, thanks for always being on top of that and for helping our readers understand.
This podcast is brought to you by the De Beers Institute of Diamonds. The De Beers Institute of Diamonds' mission is to grow and strengthen consumer confidence by providing integrity across the natural diamond industry, offering unrivaled diamond grading and testing exclusively for natural, untreated diamonds. The De Beers Institute of Diamonds provides diamondaires with confidence in a report of each diamond's 4 Cs. Every diamond graded at De Beers Institute of Diamonds is also given a unique inscription number, allowing the diamond's details to be tracked and viewed on their website. Visit institute.debeers.com to learn more and register for their grading services.
We learned right before the 24-karat weekend in New York, we learned that John Kennedy, of course, head of the Jewelers Security Alliance, president, I think is the official title, and former podcast guest, one of the nicest men around. I always enjoy
him. Very nice man.
He's just so easy to talk to and obviously so, so good at what he does that it's a great loss for the organization and for the industry. But tell us, it sounds like he's going to stick around a little bit. So while he's retiring, and congratulations to him, tell us what you learned.
So yeah, he's been doing it for 32 years. And one of the amazing facts that he told me was that the Jeweler Security Alliance has been around since 1897.
Wow.
And it's only had 4 presidents, right? And each of them has served for at least 25 years. It's a nice, interesting, meaningful job that people tend to stay with, right? And he's done so much for the industry, and he's always been extremely passionate about preventing crime. He always has a moment of silence for crime victims, which this year, actually, we also had a moment of silence for JCK's former editor, Hedda Shupack, which I thought was a very nice gesture. He's always very passionate about preventing crime and making sure people don't get hurt and making sure people follow the best practices and understanding the risks and acting wisely. And, you know, I would not be shocked if he hasn't saved a lot of people's lives simply because of getting people to act smartly and to follow the procedures. I think he has a great legacy, as he likes to always tell us. When he first started at the JSA, there was about 30 jewelers a year who were killed in different crimes and, you know, in shootouts and stuff like that. And now, I mean, every death is obviously a tragedy, but right now, usually you hear about maybe 1 person who got killed during the year. There was 1 year, a couple years back, when there was 0 fatalities during a jewelry crime. So unfortunately, you know, some of the crime statistics have not been good lately. But, you know, when you talk about murder, that's probably the thing that's scariest and that's most disturbing. So that's definitely, fortunately, that's stayed low. And, you know, he's always just very accessible, very approachable, very nice, very insightful. I mean, he knows so much about jewelry crime and he knows all the players and he has great contacts in law enforcement. And it's a huge loss for the industry. And he will stay, as you mentioned, he will stay on as the secretary of the 24 Karat Club, which I didn't know this, but he told me he'd been doing that for 22 years. So,
oh my, a loyalist in all facets. I mean, yeah, I can't say enough nice things about John. And it looks like when they search for his successor, they really have to make sure it's not somebody in their 60s, because this person to hang around for at least 25 years.
You know, when I talked to him, he said, you know, he doesn't expect presidents to keep serving for 20 years or however many years. He understands that we're in a different age and that people don't necessarily serve for 25 years or so, but it would be nice. It would be great.
Yeah. I mean, longevity, it's hard. I think you're right. Like, I think every generation sort of past the boomers has not quite looked at loyalty to a single company in quite the same way.
Yeah. And we've both been at JCK a long time, so you never know, right?
We have. I know. I'm starting to add up my own years being like,
yeah. So
you're certainly getting up there. I'm at 12 years now. So, oh, wait, no. No, wait, I'm at 14 years. Excuse me.
14 years, yeah.
Shoot, nipping there at the heels of two decades. Good Lord. Anyway, there's so much to say. And I think as we get closer to JCK, we'll have hopefully another at least couple of episodes. I'm also pretty soon heading off to Geneva for my annual trip to Watches and Wonders, which is, of course, the big watch fair that now replaces, sort of has in effect replaced Baselworld. And I'll bring back all the news from Rolex and Patek Philippe and Cartier and all the other brands that are there. And every year there's more. So there'll be watch news to share in April. And
you're going to AGS also in Austin.
Right, which is great. I wish I could go, but I think it's too close to Geneva. But yeah, Austin's a great town, and AGS is always clearly an amazing event. And I think we'll both have stuff to talk about the next time we convene for one of our chats. Fantastic. All right. Well, Rob, continue sort of on the mend, I hope. Continue, and the next time we chat, hopefully you'll be back to 100% health. And thank you, as always, for your insights.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It was a lot. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Jewelry District. I'm Natalie Comet, the producer of the podcast. Our editor is Riley McCaskill. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you may listen. Any views expressed in this podcast do not reflect the opinion of JCK, its management, or its advertisers. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us next time on The Jewelry District by JCK.